Chapter 4 Saturday, 9:06 a.m. Lucy twirled her wedding band around her ring finger, rubbing it clean of the smudge of Ruby's lipstick. Megan swung her legs from her perch on the exam table, her gown flapping open, revealing tanned legs and the bruises she wore with pride ever since making the soccer team. There were so many things Lucy should be doing, double-checking on the snake handler's processing and paperwork, prepping for tomorrow's op, reviewing the latest NCMEC bulletins, cleaning her guns. Megan rustled through a tattered copy of National Geographic, looking up over the top of the pages, glaring at Lucy. "You know you look like a slut," she finally observed in a bored, world-weary tone, as if her mother always dressed like a trailer-trash single mom ready to sell her kid to strangers. "And what's that smell?" Lucy remained silent, staring at the duckling wallpaper above Megan's head. Lately, since she'd uprooted Megan and moved to Pittsburgh, everything Lucy said only made things worse. "You could wait outside," Megan continued. "Really, it's fine. I go in alone for my checkups now, you know." Lucy wasn't sure she liked that idea either. Hard to believe her baby was 12, almost a teenager. The thought was laced with strychnine. Lucy knew all too well what dangers waited for Megan as she grew older. Hated that no matter how good she and Nick were as parents, Megan would still eventually face them alone. "Don't forget soccer next week," Megan said, adding one more thing to Lucy's to-do list. "You promised brownies, and not those lame store-bought ones with the gooey icing." "Only if the doctor says it's all right for you to play." "Mom!" With the single syllable, Megan assigned Lucy responsibility for the fall of civilization and the fate of the future of all mankind. "I can't miss anything. I'm the new kid, remember?"
"We've been here 3 months. Think maybe it's time you let up on the guilt trip?"
Instead of appearing chastised, Megan merely grinned as if she had plenty more tricks up her sleeve and was just waiting to use them on her mom. Or more likely, her much more gullible and malleable father. Megan was a pro at getting what she wanted. Took after Lucy in that respect. Just as her features reflected Lucy's Italian heritage more than Nick's Irish. Thick, almost black hair, high cheekbones, dark eyes. The only thing Megan inherited from Nick was her creamy complexion with its propensity to freckle easily. "I want to be certain the doctor has all the facts," Lucy said. She used her work voice, although she knew Megan saw right through her mask of control. "We need to get to the bottom of this." Megan shot her a look that said, "Whatever," but stopped short of actually rolling her eyes.
"You always assume the worst."
When it came to imagining the worst, Megan did not have a clue. Lucy fully intended to keep things that way for as long as possible.
"And you worry too much," Megan continued her analysis of everything wrong with her mother. "That's because of what you see at work. It's just strep throat. I already feel better after the Advil. But you think everyone's always in danger."
"That's because everyone was always in danger. In Lucy's world, at least." But she forced a smile and said, "Glad to hear it. And no, you're not getting a Facebook page." Megan's eyes widened at her mother's omniscience. Then her lips curled into a wheedling smile.
"You could use it too, you know. Like a stakeout or something."
Despite the stuffy heat of the exam room, Lucy shivered at the thought of inviting the creeps she hunted into her home. Letting them anywhere near Nick or Megan. "That's not funny. Keep this up and you won't be going online again till you're old enough to vote." The door swung open, interrupting Megan's protest. The doctor breezed in, wearing jeans and a polo shirt. He did a double take at Lucy's worse-for-wear appearance.
"Hi, sorry to keep you waiting. This beeper won't shut up. Now what brings you guys here on such a beautiful Saturday morning?"
Megan opened her mouth, but Lucy jumped in before she could say anything, earning her another glare, this time complete with eye roll. "Megan saw Dr. Collins 2 weeks ago and he said she had strep. She took 10 days of the medicine, but her glands are still swollen and the fever came back."
He flipped through her chart. Strep test was positive, but there's no guarantee it can't come back again. We call it the boomerang effect. Anyone else at homesick?
No.
Lucy hesitated, knowing she sounded overprotective. She's been looking pale to me even before the strep, and she has no energy. She's not herself.
I'm fine. Megan threw Lucy a magnum-caliber stare before she could say more. It's only that we just moved here, and with a new school and new friends and soccer and teachers giving out so much homework.
I'll bet that wasn't easy, leaving your old friends behind. The pediatrician stood in front of Megan, focused on her, warming his stethoscope with one hand, skillfully shutting Lucy out of the conversation. She straightened, irritated at first, but then took a breath and relaxed when she saw how he put Megan at ease. As he examined Megan, he kept talking.
Mono is pretty common in kids your age, and a lot of kids will get it and strep at the same time.
Open up. He glanced at Megan's tonsils.
Actually, those look pretty normal.
Let's feel those neck glands. Lucy watched as he danced his fingers up and down Megan's neck. Then he had her lift her arms up and felt her armpits. Finally, after examining her belly and groin, he sat back down.
She definitely has a few nice-sized nodes.
I'd like to do some more testing. Megan straightened at that, her hands clenching the edge of the table, casting off her world-weary facade.
What kind of tests?
I'll get another strep test here in the office today, but if that's negative, then I want you to go to the hospital for some blood work.
Blood work? With a needle?
Megan squeaked.
No way. Mom, I feel fine. Really, I don't need any tests.
Before Lucy could answer, her cell phone rang. She turned the sound off without looking at the display and stood, taking control of the situation. Megan, you'll do what the doctor says.
What are these tests for?
Just a blood count and a mono test, if the strep test is negative.
That's all?
Mono? That's not too bad. The tension that had locked her jaws eased. Mono she could handle. Her phone began to vibrate and her pager went off as well.
Damn.
I'm sorry. She yanked the pager from her belt and glanced at the message. 911. I really need to get this. I apologize.
No problem. I'm just glad it wasn't mine. Why don't you go ahead and make your call while I start the strep test?
You okay with that? She asked Megan, her cell phone already in her hand. The new Megan, the stranger who gleefully channeled Betty Davis at will, resurfaced.
Mom, I'm not a baby. Go.
Summarily dismissed as superfluous, Lucy stepped out into the hall and punched the speed dial for her office at the federal building. Guardino here.
I like that doctor,
Megan said as Lucy drove them home through the twists and curves of Pittsburgh's south side.
He was kind of cute.
Lucy resisted the urge to steer the car to the nearest cloistered convent. Over the past year, her daughter had gone from thinking that boys had cooties to comparing their pecs and six-packs. And now Megan was noticing men. She was so not ready for this. She always told Nick that she'd be the go-to person for anything from dirty diapers to broken arms, right up to puberty. Then it was time for him to take over. After all, he was the psychologist, able to unravel the mysteries of the adolescent mind far better than she could. He agreed, saying it wasn't politically correct to deal with horny teenaged boys by threatening them with a loaded 40-caliber Glock.
At least I don't have to get the blood work,
Megan continued, legs crossed on the front seat as she swung her foot in time with Led Zeppelin's Black Dog. He said you didn't have to get the blood work today. Good thing, because Lucy was already losing precious time taking Megan home. Plus, she needed to change clothes. Couldn't go out on a high-risk missing child case looking like, as Megan so bluntly put it, a slut. She wished she'd have time for a shower. She stank of sweat and algae and adrenaline. And snakes. If your throat culture is negative Monday, then we'll take you in for the tests.
But, Mom...
No buts. Megan's lips blanched, pressed together in a thin line. Lucy pressed her hand on Megan's shoulder, stroking her upper arm.
It's okay. Either Dad or I will be there with you.
Megan shrugged her hand away. Lucy swallowed her sigh,
She couldn't remember the last time Megan had welcomed her touch, since before they left Virginia. If I feel better on Monday, can I at least play soccer? We'll see. No promises. Megan blew her breath out in a sigh more sorrowful than a funeral dirge, as if Lucy had just condemned her to a fate worse than death. Lucy was glad Megan had no idea how lucky she was that skipping a soccer game was the worst catastrophe life could offer. After she dropped Megan off, she had to face a parent's greatest nightmare, a 14-year-old missing since sometime yesterday afternoon, at least 18 hours gone already. Multi-jurisdiction nightmare, divorced parents, evidence the kid may have covered her tracks, no witnesses, delay in reporting, all conspiring against their chances of finding the girl alive. Apparently the parents wielded some political clout and were waving it like a club, unhappy with the local response, so it had been dropped into Lucy's lap, probably with some relief. Exactly the kind of case the Safe Squad and Crimes Against Children Initiative were designed to handle. The kind of case that rarely had a happily ever after ending. Statistically, if Ashley Yeager had been taken against her will, then she was already dead. If she had been coerced away from home, then there was a good chance she was either dead or being prepared to enter the trade as a sex worker. Best case scenario, she ran away and right this moment was hiding out at a friend's house, laughing at all the commotion she'd caused. Unfortunately, by the time local law enforcement called in Lucy and her people, things were usually way beyond best case scenario. When Lucy and her team were called in, it usually meant worst case nightmares. She pulled the Subaru into the driveway of the new home, a remodeled Victorian in a gentrified area of West Homestead. Pittsburgh's entire south side was undergoing a renaissance, its flats and slopes bristling with new construction and renovations. They had been lucky to find this house so close to her work and Nick's office and in their price range. Lucy herded Megan into the foyer and reset the alarm. "Your dad has clients until 1. Will you be all right until then?"
"Mom, I'm not a baby."
She gave an irritated shake of her head and started to flounce away, implying Lucy had gone senile. Lucy was running late, a kid's life ticking away with the seconds, but she couldn't restrain her need. She caught Megan from behind, giving her a bear hug and a noisy smooch on the top of the head, inhaling the almond vanilla scent of Megan's shampoo. She'd like the No More Tears scent better. It felt safer with its memories of Megan splashing in her baby tub, Lucy's hand supporting her, nights spent with her and Nick, bleary-eyed with exhaustion, rocking Megan, watching over her.
"Mom," Megan protested, breaking free. "You smell awful. Gross."
She stomped into the living room where she threw herself onto the sofa and reached for the TV remote. Lucy reluctantly started up the steps. 10 minutes later, face scrubbed, hair combed, a fresh swipe of deodorant, and a change of clothes, she was racing back down them again.
"Remember, drink lots of fluid and tell your dad you had ibuprofen at 8 so you're not due again."
"Mom, would you just go already? I can handle it. Go on. They're waiting."
"Okay, okay. I'm out of here. Love ya."
Apparently, the last was too soporific for the queen of apathy, who gave Lucy a shrug and a wave, muttering,
"Yeah, right."
"I can't stay long, Mom." Jimmy gently combed no-rinse shampoo through his mother's silver-white locks. Her hair was heavy, thick. Once upon a time it had been dark as ebony, her crowning glory. The nurses here at Golden Years did a good enough job, but Alicia always insisted that Jimmy was the only one who could take care of her hair. Alicia patted her hand against his thigh and shifted in her chair so that he could reach better.
"Tell me about your new girl, Jimmy. I want to hear everything."
He grasped her hair above the comb so that when he tugged against snarls, it wouldn't hurt. Just the way she had taught him.
"I think she might be the one. She's smart, really brave, and so beautiful."
"How old is she?"
"Not too old, I hope. I keep telling you, Jimmy, a man like you, he needs a young woman to keep up with him, just like your father had me."
He closed his eyes, swaying in time with her words. Her voice was whisper soft, his one constant companion until her health had forced her to leave his side 3 years ago. Even so, he visited every day. "Your father was only a few years younger than you are now when he came and stole me away. Climbed up on the porch roof, slipped into my window like Errol Flynn, so handsome he was. Rescued me. Carried me away before my father even knew it. Good thing, too. He would have shot us both." She shuddered. "Or worse." Jimmy wrapped his arms around her from behind. She was so petite that it was no effort at all to reach around her wasted body. Years of unchecked diabetes had stolen her vision, aged her beyond her 78 years, and now threatened to finish her off if the doctors couldn't fix her kidneys. Her hand fluttered up, landing on his arm. "How old were you?" he asked, following their familiar litany. "I was 14, but I knew enough of the world, that's for sure. Enough to know that anything was better than staying in my father's house. If not for your father, big, brave, bold, beautiful man that he was, I would have died. He saved me." Jimmy set the comb aside, rested his head against hers, inhaling the lemony scent of the shampoo. So much better than the sickly sweet dead flesh smell that shimmered from the other denizens of the Golden Years home. "Tell me about my father." "Oh, how I wish you knew him. Even for one day, being near him was like being near the sun. He was so brilliant you had to sometimes shut your eyes or be blinded by the beauty of him." Her hand tightened on his arm. "I would have done anything for the man. Why didn't he stay after I was born?" She straightened, dropping his arm and pulling away, leaving him cold and alone. That question was not part of the ritual. He'd never dared to ask it before, but he needed to know. "I don't know what you're talking about." She snapped each word between clicks of her dentures. "If you're going to talk like that about your father, then maybe you should just go, be with your girl, and forget all about me." She rocked the chair to one side, away from him. "No, Mom, I'm sorry. Please don't send me away." He knelt at her side, reaching for her, but she blindly batted his hands away. "Why not? When I'm dead, you'll be all alone." Ice seared Jimmy's belly. "Don't say that. You can't leave me. A man is nothing without his family. Your father taught me that. Tell me more, please, about my father. How he saved you." Your father. A stray shaft of sunlight spun past her, leaving her face in shadows, giving her the illusion of youth. "You'll never be half the man he was. Never." Jimmy had no answer to that other than to lay his head in her lap as he knelt on the hard, cold floor. Finally she relented, feathered her fingers through his hair. "Poor, poor boy. You'll never find a woman as good for you as I am. Maybe now that I'm dying, you'd be better off dead, too."